Hello and welcome to the Halfway to Infinity podcast, a collection of short stories written and recorded by me, Michael Rees. In today's story, it's 1869 and an unexpected last-minute problem threatens the future of the Alhambra Theatre. The Patriarch. The theatre manager pushed his way through the crowd of actors, dancers and stagehands, all squeezed into the narrow, gaslit confines behind the stage at the Alhambra Theatre, London.
"Madeira!" he called out. "Madeira!"
He turned around quickly and collided with a young boy heading the other way with an armful of props, which fell to the floor.
"Oi, look where you're going, sir, you clumsy sod.
Ah, so sorry, James."
The manager stumbled on.
"Madeira! Oh, damn that woman!"
He stopped, out of breath, and pulled out a gold pocket watch from his red silk waistcoat. His sweaty hands flipped open the cover.
"Ah, everyone, can I have your attention, please?"
But the noise and laughter continued in the dim, close space.
"Everyone, please, oh, do shut the fuck up!"
One by one, the voices collapsed into a nervous silence. Somewhere near the back, there was giggling.
"Thank you. Now, we only have 10 minutes until curtain up, and I wanted to say that I honestly think this, our first performance of this year, and indeed this entire season, will be our best ever. Yes, 1869 is going to be a very fine year, a fine year indeed."
"Yeah, but you say that every year," called a voice from the ranks.
There was laughter, which quickly flowed back into the chaos and gossip of the pre-show preparations. The manager grabbed the arm of a passing dancer.
"Anna, have you seen Madeira?"
"No, Mr. Kingsley, sorry."
"Damn that woman. I will not have us opening late again."
He checked the wings once more, hurrying past the dozens of ropes and pulleys that held up the scenery and curtains for the musical extravaganza that, if all goes well, will debut in less than 10 minutes. He clambered down the wooden steps stage right and through the narrow corridor to the stage door. The tiny, black-painted space was obscured by smoke from the pipe of the doorman.
"Alfred, have you seen Madeira?"
"She's taking a shit, Mr. Kingsley, sir."
"She's not wearing her costume, is she?"
"The red and black one, sir, with the blue ribbon. Well, that's what she was wearing."
"Oh, fuck, she'd better not get shit on it. I spent good money on that costume this year, good money."
"Nah, it's a clean bucket, sir, and she's got Daisy helping her. She's got a good hand, that Daisy, so I wouldn't shit your trousers about it, Mr. Kingsley, sir."
"No, indeed."
Kingsley turned and quickly headed back. He ascended the narrow wooden stairs to the spy hole that looked out over the auditorium. He bent down, his eye hard up against the wood, but the audience was hard to see, the gaslights kept low to save money. But he could hear the murmuring of a full house, and saw brief flashes of light reflected off rows of jewellery. As he squinted through the peephole, Madeira came rushing past.
"I wouldn't bend over like that, Arthur, dear. This is a theatre, after all. You never know what might get shoved up that fat arse of yours."
She laughed as she headed to the other side of the stage to prepare for her entrance. Daisy followed behind.
"A full house tonight, Mr. Kingsley, yeah?" she said, passing.
"Yes, sir. A good start to the year, Daisy. A good start indeed."
He nervously pulled out his watch again. 6 minutes to go. Out front, the small orchestra began to tune their instruments, and a restless energy started to flow from the auditorium. Kingsley took a deep breath. This was the moment, the start of a new season, the opening night of a new production. He let the weight of the moment settle briefly over him in the darkness, and for that moment, he was truly alone.
"Mr. Kingsley?" said a sharp, rat-like voice behind him.
Kingsley turned. From out of the backstage blackness appeared a thin, stooping figure darkly dressed. He held out his hand, and Kingsley was reminded of a picture in one of the cheap penny dreadfuls, Death, its bony hand extended to take the life of a swooning young damsel.
Richard Dempsey from The Times. I've been sent to review the play.
Kingsley rubbed his hands together nervously.
There must be some mistake. Everard Grange is The Times Theatre reviewer.
Yes, he is sadly unable to grace you with his presence this evening.
It must be some kind of miscommunication.
Kingsley lowered his voice and stepped in close to Dempsey.
You see, Everard and I had a little, shall we say, discourse the other day, and...
The dark man smiled.
Yes, 2 days ago, in the Master's Arms Tavern, I believe, the result of which is a particularly favourable review of tonight's performance, courtesy of that establishment's finest ale, and the payment of £50 to the aforementioned Mr. Grange. As we speak, that very review is being set ready for tomorrow's edition.
Nervously, Kingsley asked,
May I trouble you to ask why, therefore, you are here?
Regrettably, Mr. Grange passed away yesterday evening at supper, and it would, perhaps, be a little incautious to have such a magnificent review of a grand opening night penned by, well, a corpse.
Everard dead?
Kingsley mumbled to himself. He looked back at Dempsey.
Then can you not simply put your name upon the review and none will be wiser?
That would, of course, be the easiest solution, and I would be happy to do so, were you to graciously provide me with the same favour as our recently departed colleague. Shall we say £100?
Kingsley felt an icy chill creep into his body. His hands began to shake in anger and fear. He had spent a small fortune on this show, equal to half the budget for last year's entire season. Failure tonight could doom the theatre. There was no money left. Dempsey smiled.
It would be a shame to ruin such a beautiful evening.
From behind them came the shuffle of young feet as the dancers and stagehands came up the short stairs into the wings in readiness for curtain up. They flowed around Dempsey and Kingsley, giving them nervous glances as they passed. They could sense something was wrong. Kingsley would normally come up with them, always smiling with words of encouragement. But now he stood as though touched by death. Last up the creaky wooden stairs was the dance mistress, a slender, delicate-looking woman.
Now, girls, don't forget, in the French style for the first two,
She trailed off as she reached the top of the stairs. The girls were unusually silent, looking at the floor, at the stage, anywhere but at the manager and the sombre-dressed stranger. The dance mistress quietly stood with the girls, listening.
"I've been digging," said Dempsey, ignoring his new audience.
"I know how much you've put into this production, and I know that the future of this theatre depends on this show being a success. I also know that a bad review in The Times will kill it stone dead and all your aspirations with it."
A blast of trumpets began the overture. The dancers moved out onto the stage to get into position behind the heavy red curtain. The dance mistress touched each on the head and gently said their names as they streamed past her. When the last girl had left for the stage, the mistress slipped back into the shadows behind two young stagehands who now unhitched the guide rope that would raise the front curtain.
"I will not be held to ransom by some hack writer."
One of the young men holding fast the rope called out,
"Mind yourself, Mr. Kingsley, sir, the bags are coming down."
The heavy sandbags, the counterweight to the main curtain, swung directly above them. Kingsley stepped back beyond the white safety line, a crudely painted square on the floor. His eyes remained locked on the writer. Dempsey looked up and stepped back beyond his line.
"A small price for your future, Mr. Kingsley," said Dempsey, his voice raised above the sound of the music.
The boys pulled the narrow rope, and the carefully balanced sandbags descended quickly as the heavy red curtain rose to the crescendo of the orchestra. The gas lamps at the front of the stage were turned up, and the dancers moved forward as the audience broke into applause.
Every year you nearly bankrupt yourself keeping this place open. You're not a businessman, are you, Kingsley? You leave yourself vulnerable, and I feel no shame in taking advantage of that.
The heavy bags landed between them, the curtain now fully raised. The two stagehands kept hold of the guide rope and watched carefully. There was another burst of applause as Madeira entered stage left.
Yes, a small price for the future of everything you believe in.
Kingsley stepped forward, his toes up against the sandbags. He took hold of the taut, heavy rope that held up the main curtain and looked around at the dirty, aging theatre.
You're right. I'm not a businessman. I'm a father, and this is my house. These people are my family, and I will do everything it takes to protect them all. You are so naive, Mr. Kingsley. These actors, dancers, the lot of them, they laugh at you, to your face. I've seen it. They use you.
Kingsley was calm now. He smiled and ran his finger affectionately down the thick rope and looked over at the stagehands who stood silently, the guide rope in hand.
You are not of the theatre, are you, Mr. Dempsey? I know who you are. You're the society writer. You write of the elite. But you will never be one of them.
Kingsley walked around the sandbags and drew close to Dempsey.
The circles you move in are shallow and perfidious. They tolerate you, Dempsey, but they will never accept you as one of them.
Dempsey backed up a pace, nervous at this sudden change in Kingsley.
Always the outsider, knowing nothing of belonging, nothing of family. And you know nothing of the theatre.
He grabbed Dempsey by the back of the neck and pushed him face down into the sandbags. Dempsey struggled, his thin voice muffled by the sand and rough Hessian. Kingsley put his knee into the writer's back and pinned him down as the two stagehands walked calmly over with the guide rope.
We are family, Mr. Dempsey. We look out for each other.
The stagehands pulled Dempsey's head up by the hair and wrapped the rope twice around his neck before deftly tying it off. Dempsey tried to shout, but his chest was pushed hard against the bags, his lungs squeezed tight. From the shadows, the dance mistress hurried forward with the theatre's fire axe in hand. She raised it high, and with a shout of, "Curtain descending!" brought the axe down hard. Kingsley jumped back as the axe sliced through the taut, heavy rope and into the sandbags inches from Dempsey's head. Freed of the balance weight, the massive curtain started to fall, pulling the severed rope hard through iron pulleys. The guide rope, too, was pulled up, violently ripping Dempsey from the sandbags by the neck. He ascended like a black angel into the darkness as the deep red curtain fell with ungainly speed. The lead curtain weights slammed hard into the stage with a loud crack. The music disintegrated into a fractured array of discordant notes as the dancers screamed from behind the billowing drapes and rising dust. Up in the wings, the black leather shoes of the Times Society writer could faintly be seen, swinging and occasionally twitching. The following day, a new writer for the Times newspaper made his debut with a glowing review of Mr. Kingsley's season opener at the Alhambra Theatre. Oddly, it made no mention of the brief but dramatic curtain failure in the first act. Halfway to infinity.